The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Lakers forward LeBron James did not play in last night's loss to the Houston Rockets because of what the team is calling a sore right groin. The 35-year-old MVP candidate missed 27 games last season because of a groin injury and also sat out games back in December and February for the same reason. The Lakers have already clinched the top seed in the West and remain the favorites to win the NBA title. All right, we got Richard and Matt back with us. And Richard, I want to start with you here. How concerned are you about LeBron's groin injury?
Not really concerned. The Lakers have really nothing to fight for at this point in time. And when you have an older superstar like LeBron, it's about rest. Because one thing you know is when this postseason comes, there will be no rest. He is going to be playing 45 minutes a night. Because one thing we are 100% sure is the Laker offense struggles when he's not on the floor. Now, have they improved? Has Anthony Davis' offensive game stepped up? We saw his explosion earlier in the bubble. But ultimately, they need him 100%. They want to make sure that he doesn't have a tweak. He doesn't have an ankle. Is his groin probably sore? Who knows? But ultimately, I think we're going to start to see a lot more rest for some of these superstars before they head in to the postseason.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. What most people have to understand is a groin injury is not you sit out one game and it feels better. A real groin injury takes a long time. So I'm not necessarily saying this is a groin injury. I'm erring more on the side of what Richard's saying. I think this is just going to be rest. Knowing that the Lakers haven't necessarily figured out this bubble situation yet. So they know one thing for certain is LeBron's going to have to be superhuman like he's always been. So like Rich said, he's going to be playing, you know, 43, 45 minutes a night. And now's the time to get rest because once those playoffs start soon, there's going to be absolutely no rest for LeBron.
Yeah, I think you guys are probably right that it's nothing too serious at this moment. I'd be surprised if they just pulled it out of nowhere, though. Like, I'm sure if he had to play, if this was a playoff game, he would play. But he's getting older. Like, we have to acknowledge that last year was the first time that we saw LeBron even seem slightly close to human and that he could get injured and he could miss some significant time. So I lean on the side of saying that it's probably not a big deal, but I would say that I'd be shocked in any year past that if that LeBron would have any injury that would impact his play, but not after we saw last year. So I don't think it's a huge deal, but I think it's more concerning than it's been in the past. And you guys know that we all agree that they haven't gotten to that rhythm that they want to be yet. And both of you guys have taught me today that there's not going to be any rounds off in the West. So he needs to be playing. Like, they need to be at tip-top shape in order to go against Portland. So maybe it's weighing between rest and being fine-tuned. And it seems like they wouldn't let him rest if they thought that they had everything, or they shouldn't let him rest if they don't feel like they have everything kind of back on the tracks, right?
Well, I think one
thing.
He's resting right now, which is all good. He doesn't need to be playing. What about when these important games do come into play?
Yeah. Yes, Richard.
Well, if they just said rest, they would probably take heat because the NBA has been off for 4 months, everyone's been resting. So if the Lakers just came out and said LeBron is resting tonight, that probably would have been more headlines. So they can just say it's an existing injury, which happens a lot of time, as Richard can speak to. We can have sprained our ankle 8 months ago, and if we take a night off, it could be because of an old sprained ankle. So like I said, there's probably a little bit of an issue there, but I think it was more just rest. And if they would have said rest after the you know, everyone had almost 5 months off, they would have been questioning, like, why is he resting? He needs to be playing. So they said they put the, you know, a nagging, growing, and that's going to shut everybody up.
Matt,
so
you are so
think
true.
That was just an excuse?
Like, we're all trying to see. Yeah, we're all trying to say the exact same thing.
What is that?
Okay, well, that's good news then.
Yes.
We have to start raising.
Wants to take it. You got it.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm just saying there was a lot there. Go ahead. There was a lot of things that were being said. There was a lot of things that were being said that weren't necessarily like what Matt said. We all know the truth. We know the truth. Bron is fine. Bron is fine. He might have a little this, might have that, but they're going to be overly cautious. These games mean absolutely nothing, but you know who they mean something to? They mean something to the fans, they mean something to the NBA, and they mean something to ESPN. But ultimately, to the Lakers, these games mean nothing. So they're going to protect their asset at all costs. And look, I'm not saying he's done. We're not saying that he's done for the rest of the bubble, but you might see him maybe one more time.
And I also just think that the Lakers really need to find, we know what we're going to get from Bron. Like Rich touched on early in the show, we know what we're going to get from all of our stars come these playoffs. They're all going to be their amazing selves, but they get paid a lot of money for why the teams are in position they are because of the stars. But I think what the Lakers' issues are, they really need to find that third and fourth option. I love the way Kyle Kuzma's been playing. I think I speak for everyone when we thought he was going to be that consistent third option. In the bubble, he's been that consistent third option. You also get Caruso going. You need to get Danny Green as hot as he can be because, like I said, although Avery Bradley wasn't a star, he was a key piece of that team, someone who was always going to take the best offensive player and someone who's been in big games who can knock big shots down. So I think more than anything, it's just trying to find out what else they have going on out there because they had some good chemistry and good rhythm during the regular season, but it hasn't been the same in the bubble. So like I said, you know what you're going to get from Bron. You know what you're going to get from AD. What are you going to get from the supporting cast?
Yeah, that's interesting because I hadn't considered that. I just only thought, like, they need to get everything on track right now so they might need LeBron to play because the first round is going to be tough. But the point you're bringing up, Matt, is, like, this is a good opportunity. Having LeBron on the bench, like, LeBron's not going to be able to play every minute in the playoffs. And there are going to be certain moments where they're going to have to hit big shots and they're going to have big possessions where the ball is going to have to be in Caruso's hands or in Kuzma's hands or somebody else. And this is an opportunity right now to try those different lineups, to give people different opportunities to be the chief playmaker. Because while Rondo's injury was a big deal and Avery Bradley staying out of the bubble was a big deal, I think it's not necessarily for the defense that they provide, but those guys are also LeBron's backups in a sense. Like when LeBron's playing the point guard and running the offense, he's essentially a point guard. And if you don't have anybody else who has the experience or you can trust doing that, that puts a lot more pressure on LeBron. So figuring out if you have someone else who can run the offense, I think helps in building the confidence of these guys in these big situations, I think is an important thing that they can try to do in these games that are for everybody else mean something, but for the Lakers are frankly close to exhibitions.
Wait, really quick. Dominique, how much basketball do you watch, man? I am actually impressed with you, and I have never said that to you in the 2 years we've worked together. I've never said that. I am so impressed. I'm going to stop sending you my notes, man, so you can stop cheating off my homework. But ultimately, Dominique is correct, man.
Basketball is pretty fun to watch, guys.
So is football. So I hope you guys figure this thing out, right?
We're not as smart as you can see.
We all know that. Why do you think I said I was impressed with you right now? But to tell you the truth, it's like you're right. You want LeBron James healthy and ready to go. What you don't want him to do is because they have had a long layoff. And so you play this game. There's a little fatigue. There's going to be a little drop. He's a little bit older. And you know, if the Portland Trailblazers are that team, Bron is going to have to be at 100% ready to go, ready to push. And it's going to be months of pushing because a potential second round matchup is a monster. The conference finals might be their biggest threat. And so that's going to be the most trying series, I think, out of all of them. And then what's your reward? Possibly the Bucks. Okay, Toronto Raptor fans, I apologize. Let's say 1% the Toronto Raptors have a chance of getting there. See, Perk. This is why I want to say Perk out there tweeting while this show going on, talking trash about my takes, but he's not adding me. Hey,
people
Perk, if you ever tweet, you ever tweet me again and don't at me, Perk, we got issues. And I know where to find you.
I don't think there's a problem you want.
Dang. I'll
just throw that out there.
I'm going to outrun him.
Okay.
I'm going to stick and move. Stick and move. Got to keep moving.
Richard, you're getting dissed by him.
Yeah. He doesn't care. Perk, right. I prefer for him to at me.
But I think
okay, all right. Hey, Kendrick, next time at him. He wants to hear it straight from your mouth.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Well, this is fun. The season hasn't even started, and the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry is already heating up. During a conference call this week, Jim Harbaugh reportedly interrupted Ryan Day, questioning him on a photo of an assistant coach working with linebackers, which is against COVID protocol. According to a report, Day replied to Harbaugh with this line: "How about I worry about my team and you worry about yours?" Day also shaded Harbaugh by mentioning Mercy ruling the Wolverines in their matchup. Ouch. All right, let's welcome in college football analyst Paul Feinbaum. Paul, some harsh words being exchanged here. How does this make Harbaugh look?
Stupid. Let me get this out of the way first, girlie. It's great that Jim Harbaugh cares about rules that nobody else cares about. But for the audience that doesn't understand what's really going on here, Jim Harbaugh was brought back to Michigan a number of years ago, paid $8 million a year, and the sole purpose was to beat Ohio State. That's the goal at the University of Michigan. Guess what? He hasn't done it. He really hasn't come all that close other than one year when he blew a game that may have cost the Wolverines a shot at the national championship. And last year, in Ann Arbor, a lot of people thought maybe this was the year. And Ryan Day, in his first year after taking over for Urban Meyer, just wiped the floors with Jim Harbaugh. And when you have the other guy talking about hanging 100 on you, and that's your biggest rival, and that's one of the biggest rivalry games, some people think the biggest in college football, it is a complete and total embarrassment. The fact that Jim Harbaugh even has a job these days is for another question, another day. But it's Jim Harbaugh just can't get out of his own way. Why he wakes up in the morning and seemingly says, "How am I going to call more attention to myself to the fact that I can't beat Ohio State?"
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jim Harbaugh, one of the things that he understands is that bringing attention to himself, it matters in recruiting. Like, college football is a lot about recruiting, and bringing attention to yourself helps with recruiting. And he's done a good job of that. He's done a good job of recruiting since he's been there. But the problem when you do a good job of recruiting is people expect you to win a lot of football games. And they've done a good job of winning some football games, but there's just this one, this other school that does just as good, probably better job recruiting, and then also has done a better job of in-game coaching, because their talent differential is not such that he should be 0-5. Or not such that he should be getting blown out, which has happened a few times. The talent differential is close enough that he should be able to have won a game or two in the five times that they've played. But I do appreciate the fact that he won't stop. Like, that type of false kind of arrogance and that bravado and that confidence that you'll keep running into that brick wall, like, that's kind of what it takes to eventually knock that brick wall down. You don't want him to shy away and then to be kind of a scared and be kind of a coward in that situation. He looks at Ryan Day in Ohio State and he looks at them as rivals and equals, even though the record wouldn't suggest that. He believes that, and I think that is a personality trait that you won't find in very many people except for crazy people. And sometimes crazy people do exceptional things, and it will be exceptional if they're able to beat them this year. But the last thing I'll say is he did put it under the guise of trying to protect the players from the coronavirus. Like, he said that the coach was violating the rules, and those rules were put in place to kind of protect guys from passing the virus to their coaches or from their coaches, which does protect Ohio State players and also does potentially protect the rest of the Big Ten from teams that might be violating these rules. So he found, because he can't pick on the fact that they haven't won any games, he found some way to get in there and take the high ground and take a shot at Ryan Day. But he still lost that exchange because Ryan Day shot.
The high ground. You call that the high ground?
I mean, he's taking the high ground in that he's saying, like, I care more about the health of my players and your players than you do because you're putting them at risk. But Ryan Day still won the day, pardon the wordplay, by dropping that, putting 100 on him, because that feels like a realistic possibility if you watched any of those games.
And think about this. It is important to follow the rules. I would always subscribe to that. But it's not like Jim Harbaugh called out Ryan Day for offering a recruit $100,000 in cash. I mean, this is pretty minor stuff in the pantheon of NCAA rules violations. It's petty. But that's who Jim Harbaugh is. And remember, Jim Harbaugh is old school. He wears the khakis. He still looks like he should be there 35 years ago when Bo Schembechler was the coach. His father was a coach. His brother's a coach. And that's the sad part, Nick. Jim Harbaugh, as famous as he is not even the best-known coach in his family. His brother's the one that won the Super Bowl. And remember who he won it against? Jim Harbaugh.
It's Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, that is a sad indictment that you have to look at every year when you go to Thanksgiving. But at least he doesn't have to have Thanksgiving dinner with Ryan Day, because that guy just became a coach and he's already owning you like that. Urban Meyer's one thing. Urban Meyer is a proven coach who's won big at multiple locations. But to have Ryan Day just step in, beat you handedly, I might add, and then kind of clown you on a call and in front of the rest of the coaches is a bad move. But I do think that I understand that the infraction was minor, but if he was handing out $100,000 to players, I don't know where you stand on this. I'd be more upset at Jim Harbaugh for snitching on that than I would be for him snitching on this minor infraction. Like, I feel like I can respect that at least. At least I understand that is, in my mind, closer to fair than it is potentially putting players at risk. And I understand what you're saying, Paul. Like, it's a minor infraction. I doubt that he would have done this if he saw a picture from Northwestern or he saw a picture from Michigan State. Like, he's looking to pick a fight with Ohio State. And I respect it, because like I said at the beginning, that's the mentality you have to have when you are accustomed to getting your ass beat on a yearly basis, which is what he's accustomed to. That's the mentality you have to have, that you're going to go back out there and believe and fight and pick a fight with the biggest bully on the block. And maybe this time things will work out better for you.
Okay, Dominic, we see how you roll. Paul, I have a question for you. How many more years, or we can say maybe not even years, do you give Harbaugh at Michigan?
Man, I've answered this question wrong so many times, because every time it seems like it ought to be over, the Michigan fans accept it. And by the way, I heard on another show this morning that Jalen Rose, who's a Michigan man, has gone ahead and predicted Jim Harbaugh to win next year. I mean, that may be the funniest thing I've heard. I know we're all looking for a good laugh these days. Thank you, Jalen, for making my day.
Really.
Michigan does not want to fire him for a couple of reasons. He does go by the rules. That's obvious. He has not brought embarrassment to the school other than that annual game with Ohio State. And he wins enough. The problem is that Ohio State, they fire coaches for losing to Michigan. They fire coaches who don't win national championships. At Michigan, if you win 9 or 10, go to a good bowl game, they're happy, because they accept that they're number two. They're second-class citizens behind Ohio State, and maybe soon other schools in the Big Ten. In fact, they are moving down to the middle of the first division. So it's remarkable to me. Wherever I go in the country, Michigan fans come up to me and they want to battle me. But the problem is that they have become an irrelevant program under Jim Harbaugh.
I don't think you have any plans to go to Ann Arbor anytime soon, I hope.
Not today, no. I'm good.
Look, Paul speaks the truth, though. Michigan is winless in the past 8 meetings against Ohio State, 5 of those, like you already mentioned, being under Jim Harbaugh. It's not good.
Not great.
Not great. I think we can end it there, too. I think that's all we need to say. Paul, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C. D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
It ain't over till it's over, and the Clippers proved that last night using a 25-10 run in the fourth quarter to beat the Mavericks. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George combining to score 53 points. After the game, head coach Doc Rivers was asked about where his team ranked on a scale of 1 to 10 without being at full strength. He said, "That's a good question. I don't know, 6 or 7. Still have Trez out. We still have several guys that have minute restrictions that put a major problem on us tonight, especially with the guards. We still have Pat out." All right, so only at a 6 or 7, so they are nowhere at full strength. Richard and Matt back with us here. Dominique, let's start with you here. So they're not at full strength right now. We see what they can do, not at full strength. Should the Clippers be the favorites to win out the West, in your opinion?
I picked the Clippers beginning of the season. Then I switched over to the Lakers, and I want to stick with my Lakers right now. But it feels like everything has changed because of this bubble situation, and all the changes have been in the favor of the Clippers. So, like, the home court advantage situation, that mattered to the Clippers more than anyone else because of that situation where even at their home court, they were probably going to have more Lakers fans there in the conference finals if that turns out to be the case. And then you get more rest for Kawhi Leonard, who no one really knows exactly how his knee is holding up, his leg is holding up. That rest probably pays off for him because they were doing that whole load management thing with him, and then they'll get all these guys back. And then you look at what's happened to the Lakers since they've gone into the bubble. Nothing but bad things, really. It's like they got the injury to Rondo and Avery Bradley, like those guards. We keep talking about them not having that. And then again, losing the home court situation, which you think would have benefited them. However, I'm still sick of sticking with my Lakers for not my Lakers. I'm not a Lakers fan, but the team that I picked, the Lakers, to win because the two best players are better than any other two best players, in my view, in the league, and AD and LeBron. And I trust LeBron in late game situations. Not that I don't trust Kawhi in late game situations, but I think the difference between talent and AD and what you get in Paul George, I think is significant, despite the fact that all the role players that the Clippers have are better than the role players that the Lakers have.
So we say role players, and you do make some very good points. You say role players as in Lou Will is just a normal role player. No, Lou Will would be the third best player on the Lakers. I'm going to make an argument that Montrezl Harrell would be the third best player on the Lakers. So when you start going down this list, and you have Morris, you have Landry Shamet, you have a bunch of talented players, you have depth, and one thing you need in the postseason is depth. And let me tell you this why. When you have Doc Rivers and you have T. Lou on that other side, and their ability to play the chess game and playing matchups and tweaking, because LeBron James means so much to their offense, 25 points, 11 assists, Anthony Davis, you can put a smaller player on him, but the Clippers also have big players to put on him. Physical players. Montrezl Harrell is a physical player that can affect AD. So when you start looking at that depth, and I'm going to say this, we often talk about coaching. Love Frank Vogel, love Lionel Hollins, Jason Kidd is a mentor. But ultimately, if you're going to say who's got the advantage coaching, you have two coaches that have won NBA championships and have been to a total of 5 NBA finals on the other side with the Clippers. So you'd have to give them the edge in coaching. You'd have to give them the edge in depth. And even then, when we're talking about LeBron James trying to run pick and roll, trying to play that basketball IQ that we know he plays so well, who's he switch on? Patrick Beverley? That's not a cakewalk, even though he has the advantage. Paul George? Then you have Morris? Then you got Kawhi Leonard? You look around, they are built specifically to beat the Lakers, and also why the Clippers would dominate the Milwaukee Bucks if the Bucks were to get there, because they have multiple players that could guard Giannis. So the Clippers are by far the most deep team and the best team when you look at coaching, star players, all the way down to their supporting cast.
I mean, I don't really even need to talk. Thanks, Rich. No, but
I got you, Maddie.
Come on, you got it.
Hey, my beginning of the season was the Clippers. For every reason you mentioned, just their depth is second to none. And I think they're playing their self. I don't think it's going to be pretty, by any means, because I think, to what Doc said, they're still at a 6 or 7. Trez is not fully back in the mix. Pat Bev is not fully back in the mix. Lou's still getting acclimated. But I just think it's kind of been that way the whole season. But you see flashes with this team, and, talent wins games, coaches win games, defense win games, and they have all those. They have so many bodies. Like you said, they're two best players. The Lakers' two best players are better than any two other players in the league. But these guys right behind them are the next two best. And then, like we said earlier, their supporting cast, no one can test their supporting cast. You know what I mean? So It's going to be it's not going to be pretty, because I still think they're figuring themselves out. But I have them not only coming out of the West, but I have them winning a championship this year.
Yeah, but the depth, I guess obviously you guys all know better than me, but I feel like there's a difference between depth and flexibility. So, I think the Clippers have some flexibility that is valuable, but I've never really noticed depth mattering that much in the NBA playoffs. Isn't that when the rotations tighten and you only get, 7 to 8 guys? Depth, to me, doesn't sell me. Now, the idea that they are flexible and they have different guys to play different styles and defend LeBron and AD in different ways, I understand that, and that's valuable, but the basketball that I've watched, it seems like the people with the best stars, the teams with the best stars, often are the ones that go further in the playoffs and make those big plays. And you mentioned pick and roll earlier. As talented as the Clippers are, there is no answer in the league, in my mind, to LeBron James and AD pick and roll. There is no coverage. As long as you have shooters out there, there is no coverage that stops that. There's no group of players, as talented as these players are, in late game situations. I feel confident that pick and roll at the top of the key, if the role players are shooting well and they have Danny Green, they have guys who can shoot well enough to that you have to respect them, that's going to be hard to stop. I don't see an offensive set or an offensive player that I have as much confidence in on the Clippers side of the ball. If you hand them the ball, the Kawhi and PG are both talented and great scorers, but I just feel more confident. I think that's what it comes down to for me. And it's not based on a whole bunch of analysis as much as it's based on that's LeBron James and that's AD in a late game situation. I take them over anybody.
Yeah, we're talking about late game situation, but this is one thing that I want to make sure that you understand. When you talk about depth and flexibility, they are the same thing, right? You can't have flexibility without depth, right? And when you have depth, it gives you flexibility. So I understand what the point that you're making, but this is what we're trying to say, is that you have so many weapons. So a guy like Lou Will is going to be guarded possibly by the third best defender on the Laker team. And with no Avery Bradley, no Rondo, even for spot minutes, let's say late in game, right? Because Rondo is not the elite defender he once was. He's a solid defender, but he's not an elite defender. But ultimately, when you look at that team and you look at Montrez and you look at Landry Shamet and you look at Morris, and we're not even mentioning Reggie Jackson right now. You're all talking about, and let me give you one example. The 73-win Golden State Warriors, as much as Steph Curry was amazing, as much as Klay Thompson is special, their depth, they would go to their bench, right, and their bench would go small, and then they would just dominate you late. They would dominate you late in game because they would just come at you with wave after wave after wave, and it allows you to not have to play Paul George and Kawhi Leonard 40 minutes a night. It does is it put you at 30 minutes, 32 minutes.
Right. So I think Rondo will be back by the time they face them there. So maybe he won't be fully healthy, but he'll be back to help them out. They won't be without Avery Bradley and Rondo. And the reason why I go to late game situations is because I assume the games are going to be close. No matter how deep they are, how flexible they are, I don't think they're going to get blown out. And when you have games close, that's why I go to that in that situation, because I assume that it's going to be a 7-game series and each game is going to be competitive. There might be a game that gets out of hand here or there, but in the grand scheme of things, they're going to be down to the last couple of possessions, a 1 or 2 score game in game 7. I don't think anybody would suggest anything other than that. And that's why I get down to, who do I trust more in that situation? Because both of these teams are so talented. Unless you believe that they're going to beat them in 6 or they're going to blow them out or it's not going to be close, that's why I go to late game situations. That's why I give the edge to the Lakers, because at some point we're going to be in that situation that we've all seen since we started watching basketball, where everyone already knows what you're going to do. You give it to your guys and you let them work. And I trust AD and LeBron in those last couple possessions more than I do anybody else. And obviously Kawhi is he's a great game closer. I don't think that he can't, but we're talking about the cream of the crop at this point.
Oh, I just think LeBron and AD are going to have to exert so much energy on both ends. because the Clippers are deep. They can throw different rotations and different looks at both those guys defensively, but at the same time, they're going to have to come back and guard offensively because the Clippers have so many weapons. So you're not going to be able to hide, and not necessarily saying that LeBron hides by any means, but LeBron's not going to be able to rest on the defensive end. AD is a candidate for defensive player of the year. He's going to have to be the best defensive player he's been all year. But there's no hiding when it comes to the Clippers offense because they're dogs. They play defense, and then you can have a Reggie Jackson, someone drop a 30-point game. You can have a Morris twin drop a 30-point game. You can have a Montrezl Harrell and a Lou Williams drop a 30-point game. Can you give me any names off the Lakers outside of Kuzma, apart from their two stars, that can give you that 30-point game in the playoffs? So that's why I just think the Clippers have too much depth, too much flexibility, to your point earlier, and guys that have been in big game situations and guys that have won. So, I mean, the Lakers have that too, but as far as a scoring defensive punch, they have it on both sides, and that's why I think, on top of having Doc Rivers and Ty Lue, why they're going to be the champions of this season.
Yeah, you got that probably right.
Matt, you said it well. You talk about the depth of those teams and their ability to, because it's talking about one game here, one quarter there, Lou Will, what he can do, Montrezl Harrell, what they can do. And this, I will say this flat out, all of the Clippers supporting cast, right? Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, Deion Waiters, J.R. Smith, Alex Caruso, all of those guys, those are going to be the individuals that determine whether or not the Lakers win the championship. It's not going to be LeBron and AD. That's just a flat out truth. Those guys are going to do their 25 and 10, but we've seen what happens to the Laker offense, even when AD stays on the floor. What happens to the Laker offense when LeBron James goes off the floor? That puts pressure on them to have to keep him on the floor. Where you have Paul George, you have Kawhi Leonard that can take a break and let Lou Williams go to work for a quarter, let Lou Williams go to work for a half. So you have guys on that team that allow for them to get a break. On top of this, when you don't have Avery Bradley, it's okay, Matt, to say we got to hide LeBron James a little bit. You got to hide him a little bit because he's 25 and 11 assists. So you need his offensive production and his ability to create for other people. But he's got to create through all defensive players. Montrell, all defense. Then you have Pat Beverly, all defense. You have Kawhi Leonard, all defense. Paul George, all defense. That means he's got to exert a ton of energy on the offensive end, and he's got to guard somebody on the defensive end. So it's like, it's just a lot of work, and that's my biggest issue, and that's why it's going to be up to the KCPs, the J.R. Smiths, the Alex Caruso, the Kyle Kuzma. Those will be the individuals that dictate whether or not the Lakers win a championship. If they shoot the ball well, no one can stop the Lakers. If they play just okay, then it's going to be very difficult for the Lakers to win it.
You guys are go ahead, Matt.
Pointed out the number one pick and roll duo in the league is obviously LeBron and AD, but to me, the close second is Lou Will and Trez, and they're coming off the Clippers bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? What can you do with that? Trez is going to roll someone down. You switch a big on, going to put him in a cooking. He's going to cook them. So, yeah, I just think the Clippers have too many weapons. That's why I just felt early on that, with all due respect to the Eastern Conference, that the ring was coming back to L.A. regardless. So we're just going to have to see whether it's going to be the Clippers or the Lakers that bring it.
Yeah, I think that you guys are probably right, but I have a hard time betting against LeBron and AD. I would challenge you to a bet, but y'all got basketball money, and I can't keep up. So how about we bet some push-ups on
it? I'll take any bet. I'll take a bet. You name it.
I can't afford it. It would hurt me way more than it would hurt you. I'm not with that.
Well, you guys just heard Dominique just challenge you to a push-up contest. So what do you say?
He got little arms. He got little arms. Those push-ups are like push-ups and bench press. Like, he got little arms. It takes me a lot more to do push-ups. I'm not doing that.
Or some push-ups.
We'll work on those arm muscles. All right. Well, Matt,
I feel like Charlie would win
ally.
The push-up contest. I've seen you on IG working out. Like, if anyone is going to do push-ups in this group, Charlie will get the W.
I've got some arm muscles. I will say that. But Matt, you have an ally in the statement you just made about the Clippers winning the NBA title, and that comes in the form of Kevin Durant. You guys probably heard that this week. So he's a smart man. You might know what he's talking about.
Smart man.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
I just say that there's a perception, but at the end of the day, you know, it's the football. I've loved it ever since I've been here. You know, I've been here going on a week now. And, you know, just, you know, you hear rumors about certain things, but, you know, when you, once you finally get settled in on things like that, you know, none of that really matters. It's just all about, you know, finding a way to prove your worth on a team. I have to prove to myself that's a daily challenge. And I don't think nobody's expectations will ever surpass my expectations for myself. And I'm just looking forward to the challenge and, you know, knowing and picking up this whole system, not only the philosophical way of the offense, but also, you know, how things are ran. Nobody really knows, you know, how excited I am, you know, just to be a part of this organization in many ways than one, just following up such a powerful dynasty with that is enriched in so much prestige, lineage of success that, you know, for me, a lot of people would hide from the notion to do certain things. But for me, man, I think this opportunity is something that I wake up pinching myself each and every day. And it's so surreal, you know, coming down one Patriot Place each and every day.
Okay, so do not count out Cam Newton. We're going to talk about the opt-outs that happened on the Patriots team. 8 players in total opted out of the 2020 season. But first, I want to get your reaction to what Cam said. Dominique, we'll start with you.
Well, can I react to what he had on first? Like, what? It's just, I guess I shouldn't be surprised
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, there's no reaction to be had. That was a tame Cam fit. So I appreciated it. It looked good with his dreads hanging out there and some nice glasses. But he kind of looked like, I don't know. I'm keeping my jokes to myself because they might get a call in trouble. But anyway,
Little Red Riding Hood.
I think Cam is going to be fine. And the things that he said there are the things that you expect him to say. I think that's in line with all the things that we all have been saying, is that Cam is in a different place mentally, and he's ready to go in and do the work that needs to be done to get back to the level that he expects to be and to get the Patriots back to the level where they feel like they belong. But I know we're going to get to the opt-outs in a second. I think those are significant. But D. Wood, what did you think about what he had to say?
I think you heard some remnants of Patriots speak right there. I mean, listen, I think he's acclimating just fine to the New England way. You know, it just, you know, he just kept things in perspective. You know, he just wants to come in. He's hungry. And he's just taking it day by day, you know, appreciative of the opportunity to play in New England under Coach Belichick. So he's well on his way right now.
And it was discussed a little bit yesterday, but how do you think Cam's going to fare with Bill Belichick's coaching style?
Well, I always said that, you know, when Cam first signed with New England, that was the number one thing that I put out there was, as long as he's humble and understands that Coach Belichick, no one's above the team, you know, he's going to come after the quarterback along with the 53rd man on the roster. As long as he understands that and accepts that, Cam is going to be just fine. Because, listen, at the end of the day, he's going to get the best coaching that he's ever had in his career. They're going to put him in positions to win. And so as long as he stays healthy, stays on the field, and does what he needs to do to, you know, to run that offense, he should be just fine.
Yeah, I think I know the Blinn Junior College situation that he had is a far cry from where he is now, but it's very similar because it's going to be a one-year audition. And I think you can withstand Cam, at least. He could withstand going to that middle-of-nowhere JUCO and for one season because it gave him the opportunity to be back on top. I think this is a similar situation, and it's not nearly as difficult, but he can stand 1 year because I don't suspect he's going to be the long-term solution in New England. He's going to be a free agent after this year. I think he will be able to withstand whatever it takes for this one season to have as good a season as possible to become a free agent again and to go to another team and have the type of end of career that he had planned on having. I don't think that any anything is going to distract him from that, anything short of injury, and certainly not being reprimanded or corrected or coached hard by Bill Belichick. That's not going to be enough for Cam Newton to mess up this opportunity.
Interesting. So you think it'll be one and done for Cam Newton with the Patriots?
Yeah. Well, listen, I also think people ask me, you know, what do I think about the fact that Cam Newton's in New England after 20 years with Tom Brady? And I just look at the fact that Josh McDaniel had Tim Tebow in Denver, and it took that team to the playoffs. So I understand it's been 20 years of excellence with Tom Brady, but this is a whole different animal, whole different athlete at the quarterback position that I'm pretty sure Josh Daniels is kind of chomping at the bit to really devise some different schemes that a lot of people just haven't seen in New England. So I think this is definitely going to be beneficial to both sides here.
We started talking about it weeks ago. Is Cam Newton going to be the starter week one, you think, now that we've had a little time to see how things have progressed?
Yeah, I absolutely think they do. I think the idea that they even put him as a co-starter is what they announced was just them trying to be diplomatic with Jared Stidham, because I think that it was probably not the right way, but the way I expected them to do it was to put him bottom of the depth chart, because all we hear from people like Damian who have played for Coach Belichick is everyone has to earn everything. No one steps in and is given anything. And Cam Newton hasn't had a day on the practice field yet. And for him already to be listed as a starter kind of surprised me. It suggests to me that they have more plans for Cam Newton than even we might have thought. They are, or more plans for him than the contract suggests that they should. So putting him up there right now means that they realize they have no time to waste. They're going to get Cam going as quick as possible. And that co-starter thing is going to be gone within a couple of days of training camp, I would think.
Hey, listen, let me tell you something.
Just for principle's sake.
Oh, absolutely, because it's New England. But let me tell you something. The minute Cam Newton, I'm sure Bill was like, the minute Cam Newton walked down the practice field and saw how big he was and his arm and the way he moved, like he moves different from everybody. It's like, all right, man, listen, that whole co-starter thing, that was all fine and dandy, but we know who our guy is come week one. It's going to be that big stallion Cam Newton at the quarterback position.
He moves different. He dresses different. He's Cam Newton. Okay, guys, let's talk about the opt-outs for the 2020 season. Yesterday did mark the deadline for NFL players to opt out. 66 players in total throughout the NFL decided not to play this season. 8 of those players coming from New England. This includes defensive stalwarts Dont'a Hightower, also Patrick Chung, and also starting right tackle Marcus Cannon. So, look, I got to ask you, are the Patriots going to be able to overcome these opt-outs? Like I said, they have 8 of them this year. And Damian, let's start with you.
Well, I've been on record saying that Bill Belichick, this is going to be the probably his hardest year. He's going to have his best coaching year to date, because not only are you talking about the opt-outs, and I'm looking at particularly on the defensive side of the football, with Jamie Collins and Dont'a Hightower. I'm talking about guys who left via free agency as well. Kyle Van Noy. There's a lot of guys that left via free agency or opt out that made up a significant chunk on that number one Patriots defense. But I also will say the Patriots in the draft, their first 3 draft picks were defensive players, particularly on the back seven of their defense. So if there's one organization, one coach that can deal with these type of issues, it's Bill Belichick. It's not going to be easy, because you also have to break in a new quarterback in Cam Newton or whoever the guy may be. But if there's one coach that I have faith in to get it done, it's going to be Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
Well, I guess I would agree with you. If there was one coach that I had faith in doing it, maybe it's Bill Belichick, but that is a tall order. Even Bill Belichick couldn't win in Cleveland when he didn't have the type of players that he needed. So I think we expected. I was high on them when they got Cam Newton, because I expected this defense to return and be as good as it was before. And I thought Cam Newton would be a great compliment, because they weren't going to ask him to do too much. He was going to run the ball well. He's going to throw the ball well, make good decisions. And in 5 to 10 moments in the game, he would have to do something special, but they were going to ask him to carry too much. But it feels like this defense is getting weaker. Because the best thing about Bill Belichick's defenses have been their flexibility. And guys like Chung and Hightower, like those guys are important. Guys who can cover and who can address players in the run, get off blocks. Like those guys take a lot away from them. And not to mention the injuries that are going to come. Like they're going to lose other players and they're not going to have these flexible players to step in and address those issues. And I know you as an offensive lineman appreciate how important O-line play is. They don't have their coach, Scarnecchia, who everyone credits with building that great offensive line, and then they lose Cannon also. One of the big points about Cam Newton coming to the Patriots that made me feel good about it was that O-line, because Cam's been hit so much. Everyone's concerned about his health going forward. He's never really had the opportunity to play against or to be protected as well as he would be in New England. And that, I mean, losing a right tackle, it's not a left tackle, but it is hugely important. He's one of the best linemen they have. It's going to be hard to replace all of that. And I think Bill Belichick has been great knowing the team that he has and building a game plan around that team. But when that team suddenly changes a couple weeks before training camp, that's tough. It's going to be tough to rebound from because they're not going to be able to replace these players. You can't just go out and find somebody a Joe Blow on the street who can do all the things that Dante Hightower can do. So I guess if anybody could do it, Bill Belichick could. However, I'm not sure he can at this point. I think the best thing they have going for them is not signing Cam Newton. It's not having Bill Belichick. It's being in that division. The AFC East is the best division to be in for them because there's no one else in that division who is necessarily all that scary. The Bills should win that division, but I don't have faith in the quarterback that I think you have to kind of to really wager on them, to really lean in on that pick. So it's between the Bills and the Patriots, and it's hard to know who to give the edge to at this point. It would have been easy Patriots with a healthy Cam Newton, Bill Belichick, and all of their full complement of players, but now I'm not sure.
Well, listen, I think even when Cam Newton signed with the Patriots, there were still a lot of people out there talking about the Buffalo Bills. But again, you felt confident in the Patriots even when they signed Cam Newton. Some of these guys had defected in free agency. So, yes, with the, you know, with the opt-outs of Hightower and Patrick Chung, that's going to hurt. But again, I'm going to say again, the Patriots had already drafted a safety in the second round. A linebacker in the third round that's pretty much a Dante Hightower clone as far as what he's going to bring to the table. And that's why I just go back to if there's a coach who can coach these guys up, it's Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, but Bill Belichick does not like to rely on rookies. Like, their team is unique in that they build those teams around veteran players. So we'll see. We will see.
All right, well, just for the sake of having a little fun, let's take one more look at Cam Newton's outfit. We can go off the air on this one. He looks
well
good,
done,
guys.
Charlie.
He looks good. I want to see both of you rocking a similar outfit maybe next week on First Take. What do you think?
I can't pull it off. I'm not as handsome as Cam Newton.
You can't pull it off. Anyways, everyone, thanks for hanging with us. We'll see you next week.
I can't do it. First Take.